Good morning to you. Do we have some things to unpack on the show? Earlier this week, I noted to you that I had bumped into, at church, a very famous person. And I didn't say who. Try to get some privacy, which I wouldn't usually do, but it's church, right? Okay. Many of you reaching out, social media, people I know, have asked me who that person was, and I have not shared that. This morning, and I blame Ryan Hickey, the executive producer, and my wife, I FaceTimed at 6:27 in the morning a very famous person who I don't know well enough to do that with. I will tell you who that was. Oh, the horror in 20 minutes. And I'm on the West Coast, so is this person. I didn't get lucky enough to FaceTime them when I shouldn't have at 9:30 their time. No, it's bright and early. I will tell you a story about adults rampaging against childhood joy. I will tell you a story about my son rampaging past all boundaries and not sure if I should be proud of him or not. It involves an older woman he found attractive. What in the holy hell? We will do Would You Rather. Brian McFadden will be on the show. There's a lot to get to. Buy or sell. The massive expectations of Bill Belichick. Oh, and in the guesswork, going back to the very famous person I saw at church, who I didn't name check, a buddy of mine, a guy I'm playing tennis with on Friday, told me that one of the most famous athletes on earth has moved pretty close to where I live. So I'll tell you who that is, and as a group, we'll decide how aggressively I can bump into him for the sake of this show. I'm not going to knock on his door. Probably. All right, 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. 888-710-4476. Hit me up on the old social media, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. Let me remind you, there's been some movement, a push for a NFL survivor pool where you basically take one team every single week. If that team, it's straight up, that team wins, you move on. If they lose, you're out. You can't take that team again. We've got a good group of people. I want a few more. If you're interested, my DMs, as some of you have discovered, are open over on X, or you can hit up the executive producer at Ryan_Hickey3. So hit it at Ryan_Hickey3 if you want it public, or just hit me on DM privately, SportsWriter, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. Sometimes the biggest disappointments in college football hide in plain sight, because the expansion of the college football playoff, the arrival of some big-time names, the NIL reality, has, hell, Ohio State and Michigan winning national championships the last couple years has, in a really cool way, focused some big storylines and a lot of the spotlight and a lot of the gravitational pull of our attention on the good stuff going on. That doesn't change the fact that Lincoln Riley has been, relative to expectations and the program that he inherited and the guy that he brought with him, a disaster. An abject failure. You think Bill Belichick's getting 4 years of disappointment, mediocrity, heading in the wrong direction at UNC? He's not. He's not. And this is the year, whether we had paid attention to it or now we are, that Lincoln Riley better put up or shut up. Let me rephrase that. You better win or you better go. It is hard to overstate, when he left Oklahoma, what a coup that felt like for USC. What a disaster. And it hasn't been great. It was for Oklahoma. Maybe the best coach, not named Nick Saban, in America, the thinking went, was going to the West Coast, and with the shiny pedigree of USC, with the transfer portal that allowed him to bring in Caleb Williams, he came with him, remember, from Oklahoma, with the recruiting behemoth that is that program, Lincoln Riley's greatness was assured. Forget that. That was already locked in. Excuse me. I correct myself. USC's revival of greatness was assured because Lincoln Riley was so amazing. And that has been patently false. We had a little bit of a false hope at the beginning. We had some what looked like shoots of spring for that program. What looked like in the first year, oh, it's Pete Carroll 2.0. And it hasn't been. It's been Clay Helton 2.0. the guy that got fired because the program wasn't where it was supposed to be, so they paid a bunch of money for a guy that's the same. Year one, 11-3, lost in the, remember this conference, Pac-12 championship game, did not get to that playoff opportunity, that championship opportunity, but you could kind of convince yourself it was going in the right direction. We're going to have, you know, Caleb ended up coming back, we're going to have a great year, it's going to be amazing, and then the wheels started to come off. 8-5 in 23, and then 7-6 last year. 7-6! Let me give you some stats before Urban Meyer I think sort of passive-aggressive, slipping the knife in, wouldn't mind that job, gives you some context on this here in a second. Clay Helton was the much maligned, not suave, not shiny like Lincoln Riley former coach. And he was fine over the course of his time. He was just mediocre. He was basic. He was USC being good but not great. He was a program that, like the program now, was loaded with talent but not with the high-level wins that is expected from that talent and from that school. And the reality of college football, the difficulty is if you're a top 5 or top 10 program, and you are if you're USC, you are, you're in that list, it doesn't matter. I like to make fun of Penn State because it makes me laugh with Ryan Hickey. That is not a top 5 program in America. Traditionally, they can win a national championship this year. Texas has been down and back since USC hired Lincoln Riley. Michigan was blessed with a great coach, but not a history of any recent kind since Lloyd Carr. That's been a long time of actual success. They won a national championship. The SEC is just a revolving door every year of a school or two. I'm not talking Alabama. I'm not talking Georgia, who arrived with the perfect opportunity to be great. And that's happened every year for the last 10 years, let alone the last three. There are a lot of schools outside of whatever the Blue Bloods actually are, outside of USC, who are competing. So you can't fall back. You have to be better. That's why Clay Helton went away. And Clay Helton was, you know, over his last 40 games, was fine. He was 24-16. 24-16. That's not great. It's fine. And he wasn't great against ranked teams, which, you know, I have to check, but I'm pretty sure you have to beat those teams to win national championships. Last I looked, Clay Helton was 5-8 against those teams. And here where I'm sitting in L.A., USC fans became rabid in their desire to get rid of him. And ferocious in their belief that someone like Lincoln Riley was their destiny. Yeah, he was, just not in the way they thought, because he's Clay Helton 2.0. Helton 24-16 over his last 40 games. Lincoln Riley 26-14 in his three seasons with 40 games. It's basically the same record. It's basically the same team. Helton 5-8, as I told you, against ranked teams. Riley 5-9. This year, USC, and let me frame this for you in a way that's obvious but important. Every year, USC, now this has become less true because of Oregon and how well run that program has been. But over the last 20 years, over the last 10 years, over the last 5 years, to a degree over the last 3 years, USC is the most talented football team, their roster, their recruits on the West Coast. This is a big area. Just like Texas should be good because you can pull from Texas. Just like Florida's programs, and they haven't always been, should be good because you can pull from Florida, there's this advantage of being in Los Angeles because you are pulling from the entire West Coast, and there's a huge football churning pool of excellence here, especially in the state of California, but adjacent as well. Lincoln Riley has that advantage, and yet this year, coming off mediocrity, coming off a bad season by most standards, certainly by USC standards, they are projected, this media poll just came out from the people that cover the Big Ten, to be 9th in the Big Ten. To be middle of the pack. Iowa is expected to be ahead of them, and I say that as a guy from Iowa. Indiana, who had a nice year last year, is expected to be ahead of them. Illinois actually got taken 4th. And by the way, Illinois could be good this year. That should be USC, the worst case scenario. Every year, worst case scenario, Lincoln Riley, the money that he's making, his supposed guru of greatness of quarterback play, and we'll see if Jaden Maiava is any good. I mean, he was good last year. He was, what, 3-1, 4-1, and at the end of the year, he lost to Notre Dame, beat Nebraska, beat UCLA. Nobody cares outside of LA. I know that's a local sort of rivalry. Doesn't matter. Beat A&M in a bowl game. All right. We'll see. Every year, at a minimum, when the media poll, and I think the general legitimate consensus goes, and this is the order, Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon. It's a down year for Michigan, too, by the way. USC's got to be in that top four, that top three. The year where Michigan's not one of the four teams that are most likely to be a contender in the Big Ten and therefore an absolute contender to be in the college football playoff, when one of those schools, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, are down, USC's got to be in there. Hell, let me throw that aside. I'm being nice because it's a Thursday and I'm in a good mood. My kids had good first days of school. They should be in it every time in the top, every single time. Urban Meyer was on The Herd with my friend Colin Cowherd. Now, this is in June, and I want to frame this. I already did, but I want to say it again. Herb is mired in dysfunction when he goes to the NFL. He is. And I would not, and I could be wrong, but I would not describe him as the most likable person on the face of God's green earth. Maybe not even number two, or number 2,331. But he's a great college coach, and he's a smart guy, and he likes living in L.A. And USC, if he ever wanted to get back into coaching, he's obviously addicted to it, would be an interesting job. So I think there's some subtleties here that you have to sort of frame properly. I don't know that Urban Meyer is actually rooting for Lincoln Riley, but everything he says about how good that job is real, just like his belief that Lincoln Riley is going to succeed, I think is probably false.
Well, I guess the way I've always looked at USC is I equate them to Ohio State, Alabama, Texas, and, you know, Florida. I've always looked at USC as one of the top five jobs in America. So I've got a lot of respect for Lincoln Riley, and I promised myself I would never call for jobs because I'm not going to do that. However, when 7-8 wins is acceptable at USC, that's when I don't know. I don't agree with that. I mean, yeah. USC is USC, and I think they're going to have a great year, and I think we're not after this conversation. But 8-5, go 8-5 at Ohio State and see what happens.
He does not think it's a great looming possibility of opportunity, by the way. I'll never call for someone's jobs, however, is calling for someone's job. Here's the other thing. If you're ever going to sell the illusion, at this point I think it's an illusion. Lincoln Riley is the, name me a bigger disappointment in college sports. I'll wait. Their schedule's not that hard. Outside of Notre Dame, which they play, obviously, that game's on the road. I mean, at Illinois, I know Illinois is good, but you can't beat Illinois. You shouldn't be the coach of USC. That's not a shot at Illinois. That is a shot at Lincoln Riley. They play Iowa at home. I mean, I'm from Iowa, but who are we kidding? It's Iowa. At Nebraska, not a worry. They host a Michigan team that's good, but not great. They're very, very, very beatable. They play at Oregon, of course. That's the end of the year. You know who's not on this schedule? Penn State. Do you know who's also not on this schedule? Ohio State. And they're projected to be ninth by people that cover the sport constantly. And the problem here is, like beauty in your youth, like wealth if you're a little too flippant with it, like anything that feels as if it's forever but isn't, the greatness of USC, the eventual inevitability of their victories, their place among the stars in college football is not guaranteed. At Nebraska's a yawn. It wasn't 20 years ago. It's easy to forget. You might be young enough, you don't know this. Nebraska used to be one of the premier programs in the sport, and now it's clutching at the idea of maybe someday consistent respectability. There's no reason USC can't go that direction. I understand that it's easier to fall apart in Nebraska because you don't have the recruiting base. I get that. So let me give you Florida State and Miami. They are also positioned in a part of the country that produces a lot of football talent. And by the way, USC is not the only place that plays football on the West Coast, right? So you the further you fall behind, the easier it is for players to go, I guess I'll go to Utah. I guess I'll go to Oregon. Hell, maybe I'll go to Colorado. That Deion guy's doing things. Oklahoma, which is sort of ironic, has fallen by the wayside. They had a losing record last year. USC's bet on Lincoln Riley made sense, but its failure to come through could have lasting consequences. Even Alabama 15, 20 years ago was in that position. But there's only one Nick Saban, and he's retired, and he's not coaching USC ever. Lincoln Riley was the bet, and his failure, and it's been a failure, if he can't turn around this year, it's about more than just firing Lincoln Riley. You may find yourself as USC very, very, very far behind. God forbid Penn State wins a national championship, and they get the rush of recruit and money and all the things in the glow, all of a sudden you're USC. There's three big boys in the Big 12. Or Oregon, for that matter. Or Big 10, excuse me. Look, I'm not trying to pick on Iowa. I know we're on the air in Iowa, but I'm going to pick on Iowa because I'm from Iowa. They're basic. And I root for the Hawkeyes. I do. They're a good program. They're not a great program. Kirk Ferentz is a highly paid coach who's never expected to win national championships. Hoped for is not the same thing as expected. And USC's not even that program. Iowa's projected to be a better program this year. And I told you that over the last 3 years, the only 3 years Lincoln Riley's been here, he is 26-14. That's the exact same record as the Iowa Hawkeyes. It's unacceptable. It's a failure. It's bad. Matt Leinart's right. He kicked all this off when he said this week he's on the hot seat. And there's more context and blah, blah, I'm rooting for him, blah, blah, he can do it. He's on the hot seat. Lincoln Riley was one of the most celebrated coaches in America, went to the one of the most impressive programs in America by history. This is like going to Texas if A&M and Baylor were disasters during your tenure. Because the other thing about USC is that if you want to live in Los Angeles, and it's not a bad place, if you want to sell some kid who plays football from here or from somewhere else, here's the ocean, here's the beach, here are the ladies, here's the weather, the two schools that compete for time and attention are USC and UCLA, which has been down and out. If you want to expand it to greater California, you're not going to play in San Diego. Cal's thinking about shutting down its football program. You have this massive state, and you have only one program that has a stranglehold on the ability to bring in talent. And that's just for people that are California-centric. If you are the best linebacker in America, and you're doing your thing in Michigan or Florida or Massachusetts or Texas or Oklahoma or Missouri, USC should be on your list, and Lincoln Riley should be able to close that deal. But he can't because you're not impressive. You're not very good. And this is the other thing, and this is why programs can fall off so quickly. The days where tradition and the pull of tradition and history could sweep up talent because of what it did 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago is over. The world moves a lot more quickly. Kids, young people, are figuring out how the world works on TikTok. My daughter, who's a, God help me, a junior in high school, is trying to think about colleges, and she's going, go to TikTok and figure out what schools you want to go to. It's whatever happened in the last 24 hours. In the last 24 hours, Lincoln Riley's Lincoln who? So this idea and this notion that Lincoln Riley was this genius 4 years ago at Oklahoma and almost did things there is meaningless to the kids and players he's trying to recruit. And the fact is that 26-14 is actually not what recruits are going to see. They're going to see 7-6 last year and 8-5 the year before in a program that's just meh. They're still going to get better recruits than places that are like that because it's L.A., but the real ballers are going somewhere else. They just are. So Lincoln Riley has put his own program and his own career behind the eight ball. Here's the reality. Hot seat doesn't state it enough. They don't make the college football playoff this year. They should fire him. He should be gone. USC's in deep trouble. At least when you had Clay Helton, you had the excuse that you had Clay Helton. What's your excuse now? We're going to talk Bill Belichick. We're going to talk a bunch of storylines. We're going to talk Penn State. Can Alabama and Kalen DeBoer get it going? Is Georgia going to roll? Are we going to see Arch Manning and Texas be the perfect union? All these amazing stories are going to grab our attention. And I don't always want to focus on the negative. But Lincoln Riley has been a disaster. If he doesn't win this year, he's got to go. 888-710-4ISN. Who is the famous person that I... Oh, my God, I'm an idiot. That I FaceTimed this morning. After your calls at 888-710-4ISN, I will tell you here on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
There's nothing that I love more than watching an interview with some famous actress or hot person who's like, I just really, personality is what does it? No, it doesn't. Because I have a great personality. And you weren't dating me 15, 20 years ago. I'm hilarious sometimes.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Not that time, though. Welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Let's get to a phone call or two at 888-710-4ISN, talking about the fleeting nature of just maintaining your spot at the college football, in the college football pantheon. USC is the example. There's more. Chris in Lexington's got a thought. Chris, what up, buddy? You're on Ryder Than You.
Morning, Bill. All right.
Morning, buddy.
Ryan kind of informed me I'm kind of up against it, so I'm going to give you the condensed version of what I was going to about to lay out.
Hit
I'm
me.
A Catholic kid from Pittsburgh, Bill. Been a Notre Dame fan since, you know, and I'm old enough. I'm 55, so I remember the Catholic versus the Cossacks game and how many pros there were on the field that day. And then we cast that last national championship in 90, had a chance in 93, blew that. And then it was by the time Lou was gone, the Golden Dome was tarnished, Bill. And it became so glaringly obvious. I remember a bowl game in the early 2000s against Ohio State, and it was so glaring to me how much lacking of speed and just physicality and athleticism that we just couldn't get anymore. And I think, I hope, and it proved to me last year, because all my buddies were like, oh, you're going to get boat raced by Ohio State. And when we didn't, Bill, I'm hopeful that finally, after 30-plus years, we might actually have the right guy to actually get us back on the map. But when you said how easy it is to lose that and you can't just get him based on name, I wanted to throw that out because I think Notre Dame's a perfect example of that.
Chris, that's a great call on Notre Dame. By the way, fellow Catholic, right here with you. Everyone's welcome. Look, there's only so many places atop the top. That doesn't change, however you want to assess how many there are. And when you have programs spending, I mean, look at the money UNC, and we might dive into this in a really significant way tomorrow. Look at the money UNC is spending on Bill Belichick. They're not doing that to fail. It doesn't mean they'll succeed or they won't succeed. Well, you know, we'll see. But they expect that program in 2 or 3 years minimum to be one of the 12 best programs in America and be in the college football playoff. To do that, somebody's got to be out. And so every year, and it's not just UNC, Colorado, look at the money Colorado's spending. Not just money, the opportunity. If Colorado or UNC succeed, if one of them succeed, somebody has to consistently go away, whether it's Clemson or it's Alabama or it's Michigan or it's Ohio State or if you want to put Penn State in there or it's USC, to say nothing, Nebraska trying to get back to where they are, Texas, A&M, Auburn's a program that expects their fan base think they should be every single year in the mix. There's only so much room. And USC has jeopardized not just now, but the future by swinging and missing on Lincoln Riley. And by the way, had I been the athletic director, I would have screwed that up too. Seemed like it was going to work. Seemed like a great hire. Just like quarterbacks that get drafted into the NFL at the number one slot or one of the top picks, big-time coaches, you never know. I've got so much I want to get to, and I'm top, but Kalen DeBoer's been fine, good. What if Alabama's a little bit worse than last year? What if they're okay? They can slide into that spot. They can start. The next class of recruits might be like, they're good, but I'll go to Georgia. There ain't no Nick Saban anymore. You can lose your hole really quickly. All right. Good morning, Ryan Hickey. I blame you for the story I'm about to tell.
Good morning. Good morning, Bill. Quite the intro. Thank you.
It's not your fault. So my wife sent me a story. Lori really likes to blow my phone up and call me or barge into my office if she's around. And you should talk about, I saw that there were 3 kittens that got loose at a basketball game. People love kittens. I'm like, Lori, I love you, usually. Right now it's hard. Let me just talk about sports. She always wants to just tell me what to talk about. NPR talked about, my mom's listening. She'd be really mad at that imitation. Sorry, Mom. She saw the story. I will talk about it. But I got flummoxed because she was blowing up my phone. I was talking to you. And all of a sudden I looked at FaceTime and I was FaceTiming Matt Leinart. So here's the deal. Matt Leinart's in the news. He called, not called for, he said Lincoln Riley, this is correct, is on the hot seat. I know Matt, I knew Matt really well when we worked at Fox Sports together. I once bumped into him at picking up our kids at a school in L.A. and didn't know who, I was so tired, didn't know who he was for 10 minutes. Hey, Bill, he's a really nice guy. I haven't got him on the show in a couple years, so I told you, like, I'll reach out. We'll see what Matt, like, Matt's a super nice dude. FaceTimed him, and I mean FaceTimed him for 30 seconds. Couldn't find the button, there's stuff going on. What do you think Matt Leinart's reaction is going to be? I don't think I've talked to Matt Leinart in 4 years. Well, what's Matt's reaction going to be when he sees the old Bill Ryder FaceTime?
I was just going to ask the first question before I answer that is, so you think your number saved in his phone? Like, when he looks at his phone, whenever it's going to say, I mean, Bill Ryder missed FaceTime call, not your number, just a number, missed FaceTime call.
Assuming he hasn't changed his number, and I don't, this is not a shot at him. I just, unless you're extremely famous these days, people tend not to change their phone numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does LeBron change his number every year? Probably. Maybe. So, yes, assuming he hasn't changed his number, I'm saved in the phone.
There's definitely going to be a WTF.
6:27 in the morning.
Now, I wonder if he's going to text you.
Sorry, Matt.
Did you text him? Like a follow-up text, my bad, fat thumbed it.
I didn't. is that the move?
I think at this point, now that it's
been an hour.
An hour, probably not, assuming he's probably up.
If I weren't discussing on the radio, I could do the old, I just saw it. Oh, that's weird. I just noticed
my... Interesting.
I'm an idiot. Oh, so the story that Lori wanted me to see that I had somehow missed is that this at a Padres game the other day. A kid got on the field. Don't go on the field. You shouldn't be on the field. And one of the security guards basically form tackled him. You can't do that, right? Surround the kid and gently bring him down. I mean, come on. I mean, I'll tell you the story. My son Henry, when he met Messi at this game, went to the first Messi game. When Messi was in L.A. at LAFC, we had pretty good seats through friends of ours. We were on the field. And if you watch that game, which you won't, but if you went to Apple TV and you watched it, there's a guy named Jordi Alba who plays left back, foreigner Miami, who played for Barcelona, my wife's favorite player. My son loves him. And we had seats where you can walk onto the field. And you're not supposed to, but and Jordi Alba came over to do a throw-in, right? Throw-in. And Henry just walked over to him. During the game, it was like, high five. And Jordi Alba gave him a high five. And security tried to kick him out. And then they calmed down because that's the right response. He's a kid. Should you run on the field? No. Are you being kicked out? Yes. You can't form tackle a child, can you, for running around a baseball game?
Especially in that video where the scene was controlled. Like someone kind of put their hands on the kid and the kid kind of stopped running. Ellie, let's just call it five. To come in 5 seconds late and basically lower the shoulder, Ray Lewis style.
Took him down.
Drive him into the ground that's not the move.
Eight or nine, you think that kid was?
Somewhere in that, yeah. Like, it wasn't like he was young enough to where it's not a mistake of he's older and like we're just going to treat him like an adult.
He's not 12 he's trespassing. Or 14.
Right. Where it's like, oh, maybe he's a teenager. Screw him, whatever. Let's just drive him. He's young enough to where, okay, this is a pretty young kid making a bad mistake.
Do you know the expression nurse ratchet? Do you know that expression?
A nurse ratchet, no.
So Nurse Ratchet was a character, if I have this right, in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. It's a book and a movie where basically she's a militant, awful, terrible nurse who's like all about the rules. It's an expression for someone that's awful who's, you know, forces rules for the sake of it and is power hungry. I need a similar expression for the security guard who thinks they work for the Secret Service. And I have a loved one who works for the Secret Service. So, like, I can tell you what a phony looks like, what a poser looks like. And it's that guy that tackled that kid. I don't know what any pop culture, because you're a pop culture correspondent. Any pop culture references come to mind about a security guard who's out of control, who thinks he is he's Clint Eastwood, but he's actually just a security guard. And nothing wrong with being a security guard, by the way. But don't tackle a kid.
No pop culture references. I've only seen one movie surrounding a security guard. I'll not name the movie because it's pretty embarrassing.
Was it Bart Mall Cop?
Paul Blart Mall Cop, yes, where it's kind of the opposite. He took his job seriously.
Okay.
Wanted people
What's his
to
name? Paul,
rules.
Paul Blart?
Yes, Paul Blart Mall Cop.
All right, we'll just go Paul Blart. This guy blarted this thing. He blarted the hell out of this thing. Very quick story, then we're going to move on. But I just want you to tell me if this is good or bad because I actually don't know. My son Henry has a tutor after school that we go to sometimes. And she, God, I hope she doesn't listen to the show, is, I don't know, 23. And she is, as Henry said, these are not my, we're driving yesterday, he goes, she's a baddie. And I go, what? He's like, she's a baddie. And I thought he said bad. I go, she's bad at her job? He goes, no, she's a baddie, which means hot, right? She's hot. I'm going to tell her at the end of the semester. I'm like, all right, man. So I got to pick him up from the tutor thing. It's me and her and him. And she has the wrong phone number for Lori and I, right? So, like, I'm like, oh, you have the wrong phone number on the sheet. So she's typing into the computer the new phone number, and Henry leans in. So it's just the three of us in the room and goes, her name's not Lisa, but let's say it is. Lisa, I think you're beautiful. And I just, and I don't know if she heard him because she just kept typing. I think she missed it. And he just, like, stared at her. And then I got the hell out of there. Should I encourage this in my 13-year-old son, or should I be like, bruh, I'm your dad. Don't do it. He hit on a grown woman in front of me. I mean, he tells me these stories. I'm like, okay, that's pretty courageous. You're funny. I'm standing there. I don't, dude. I'm trying to pair. What are you doing?
Number one, I'd love to have half his courage.
Me too.
Holy smokes.
It was all, I mean, God, I'm so glad you didn't hear him. I'm not going to lie.
Number one, I thought that story was going to go somewhere else.
So yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that's where it went.
Yeah.
Number two, well, at least he'll be excited to go to the tutor. I know that many people that are.
He is pretty excited.
So that's a win.
When did Batty replace Hottie?
I would say over the last few years, it's kind of making a comeback.
Batty.
And then in probably 2 or 3 years from now, a different word will replace Batty, and then kind of, you know, just go through another cycle, and then eventually hot will be the word back in, and let's do it all over again.
Yeah. Anyway. High five on Jordi Alba, hitting on his teachers. Cool. Great.
Confidence is unflappable.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Maybe he could get some of that confidence to Lincoln Riley, and that guy could go out there and do some recruiting of his own. Of players. Although I'm not sure that's the issue with Lincoln Riley.
Some confidence in his own coaching ability, his own play
call. I've lost my confidence in him. All right. We didn't get to half the stuff I wanted to talk about, but that's fine. We'll do Bill Belichick tomorrow. I think that deserves a deeper dive. I'm actually really interested, speaking of confidence, in the confidence that we should have in UNC. And there are some stories out there where I just don't know, where I don't know enough to even have a strong opinion. I like having opinions. I'm an opinionated guy. I can be wrong, rarely. I can be right, more often. But whatever. I'm not sure on UNC. Do you have a hard lean one way or the other?
No.
I don't. Yeah.
I could see him going 9-3. I could see him going 3-9.
I also think that the Lincoln Riley thing, and we'll hit this tomorrow, but we are going to react aggressively to whatever happens at UNC. I'm going to. It's actually, the assessment is going to have to take place over a longer timeline. It isn't 4 years. I mean, you can get all your guys in right now, but it's probably 2 seasons for me, right? I mean, there's a, if he goes 8-5 or 9-4, am I going to lose my, I don't know, it sort of depends on how they progress, how they look. I mean, I'm just going to say the quiet part out loud. Can Bill Belichick still coach at a really, really high level? Can he coach it collegiately? All that stuff we're going to get into tomorrow. All right, let's do this. We've got Would You Rather, and I'm not just saying this. Ryan has put together some hellaciously impressive questions, and I'm excited to dive into this segment after a sports flash from Crystal Presti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Now that's the radio tease right there. I love it. We're sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Your small business keeps you on the go. Progressive Commercial Insurance keeps your policy within reach with our easy-to-use mobile app. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. NFL preseason winding down. Roster cuts on the way, which led to a bunch of trades Wednesday. Also, decisions to be made on injured and rehabbing players. And with that in mind, Bucs head coach Todd Bowles said this morning that they will carry both wideout Chris Godwin and left tackle Tristan Wirfs on their initial 53-man roster, even though both players are not expected to play in games until October. Sigh of relief for the Dodgers. Yes, they dropped 2 out of 3 to the lowly Rockies in Denver. And yes, Shohei Ohtani was tagged for 5 runs on 9 hits in his first career pitching start at Coors Field last night. He also took a 93-mile-per-hour line drive off the thigh for manager Dave Roberts.
I took him out because a little bit of the score, a little bit, most part of it because it was getting stiff. And there was some swelling there. So it was in the thigh, fortunately, and not off the knee. But it got him square.
Expected to be okay. Dodgers clinging to a 1-game lead over the Padres atop the National League West. Lastly, from golf, round one of the Tour Championship from Eastlake. It's underway next hour. Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy make up the final pairing. Scheduled to tee off at 2 p.m. Eastern. I'm Chris Lopresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I'm very excited. So is he. It's time. He's fired up. Starch Bank. Starch? That's laundry. Let's do it again. And hashtag radio day. Start bench cut. Oh, my God.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right. What up? Happy Thursday. Bill Ryder with you. Let's get into Would You Lather.
It's time for Would You Rather on Writer Than You.
Oh, you caught it, huh? They're
very
all
nice.
Going to be laundry puns now.
I got nothing. You put me on the spot. I got nothing here. So I'm going to leave them to you. I'm going to read the script.
Okay. I have one for you at the end.
Okay.
So save me a little time.
Oh, right. Okay. Let's start with the school close to you, Mizzou. They announced this week they're going to play both of their quarterbacks in the opening game next week against Central Arkansas. Bo Perbula, Sam Horn have been in a close quarterback competition. It's not going to be solved by the time week one does come around. So would you rather see a quarterback competition carry into the regular season or just pick a guy and see how it goes?
Yeah, I'd rather root for a different school than Missouri. You're right. Correct. What are we doing here?
Can you learn anything when you face Central Arkansas?
I hate half of my teams. No, I would just pick a guy. I would rather have a coach who knows how to make a decision and live with it.
That's fair. Fernando Tatis Jr., he makes a decision all the time. He loves robbing home runs. Another one.
That's the transition. I can't judge you. I can't pronounce the words that we say on the show unless they coincide with doing the laundry.
Nice.
Buy or dry. Sorry, I interrupted you. What are we doing here?
I like that. Fernando Tatis had an incredible home run robbery yesterday. So would you rather, Bill, if you're a baseball player, rob a home run or hit one?
This is Devers, right? So I've done both. I had a home run robbed in a tryout, but still. In high school. I'd rather hit a home run. Right?
Would you rather strike? Yes, I would agree. Offense over defense. Yeah. Would you rather strike out or have a home run robbed? Like, you're out either way.
Have a home run robbed. 100%.
Okay.
1,000%. There's just the feel, like, when you make that kind of contact, there's no better sound or feeling in the world.
But then it's sucks that all for not.
But you have that second and a half where you think, where you're like, yeah, I did it. And then that SOB goes over the wall.
Run out there to right field and tackle him. Beat him up. Don't do that again. We talked about Lincoln Riley and the pressure on him. We talked about how he has looked like Iowa over the last few years. So would you rather, Bill, moving forward, have Lincoln Riley as your head coach or Kirk Ferentz?
Oh, wow. At the same program. Because I have this theory that Bill Snyder is one of the greatest coaches in the history of all of college football, and he doesn't get the credit he deserves because he never left K-State. But he would have been massively successful at whatever, Texas, anywhere. I don't really like Kirk Ferentz. I respect him. I don't. People I know who've interacted with him had a bad interaction, and I love those people, so. And maybe Kirk was having a bad day. Maybe he ate something that didn't agree with his stomach. I don't know. Is it crazy to say Kirk Ferentz?
If the programs are the same, are you coaching the same program?
I mean,
Iowa, look, they've never been a national title contender for the most part, but they've always win 8-9. Like, you could argue
they win games.
The most out of his talent, so if you now give him better talent at the just, you know, general school. He's consistent. Lincoln Riley's not been.
It's funny because they both have a similar approach to offense, but Lincoln Riley's is on accident and Kirk Ferentz is on purpose, which is to say they don't score points. At least it's a strategy.
At least he knows what he's doing. Has an idea of what he's
doing.
A plan, a bad plan, I guess,
that's a good
better
question.
Than no plan. Oh,
who would you take? I mean, because the ceiling on Riley is high, but it's just... Because he did take over a great program from Stoops, and he did a great job, but he inherited a completely highly functioning program when Bob Stoops, pretty surprisingly, stepped away. And Stoops had only won a national title once. It had been at the very start, so maybe he was frustrated with his near misses. But Oklahoma dominated the Big 12 back then. And he went into a USC that was okay under Clay Helton, and he didn't succeed, so it's... I'm not sure how good Lincoln Riley is. Anyway, what would you do?
I think I would still take Lincoln Riley just because I've seen him make the playoff a few times, and at least he has had quarterbacks in the past play well. Now with Caleb Williams, he's doing 7-6 one year. So
James Franklin gets fired this year when you guys lose 4 games. You can have Lincoln Riley or Kirk Ferentz.
Oh, this is so tough. I think, oh my goodness. I think I would take the chance of Lincoln Riley.
I think it's a mistake. I'm with you. I just...
So tough. That's a great question. Wow. The fact
tough,
that even
right?
we're sitting here... Look, there's no disrespect to Kirk Ferentz, but the fact that we are...
No, you can disrespect Kirk Ferentz.
It's a flip of the coin. And it's like you say Lincoln Riley, you don't feel good about it, is nuts. Oh boy. You may not feel good about this one here, Bill. So Kyle Tucker's been struggling. We talked about it the other day. The Cubs are going to bench him now for a little bit, try to get his head back on straight. Well, it came out yesterday that he's actually been playing with a hairline fracture in his right hand since back in June, which is kind of really where things have taken a turn. So would you rather see a star athlete fight through injury like we saw Kyle Tucker did, or stop playing and try to get back to 100%.
This explains everything, doesn't it? He's just been abysmal, and I respect the toughness. I would rather he get better. And by the way, I probably would say in a vacuum the other answer, but this is the reminder that's the wrong answer. You got to be healthy to play. You got, especially that kind of an in your right hand when you're a hitter. Yeah.
As a lefty batter, so his right hand's on the bottom, like you're kind of your power hand.
I broke my right wrist and played a pretty important baseball game, and my dad was my coach in Little League. And I played most of the game, and it was awful. Just swinging the bat was crazy painful.
I think it's one home run since June 29th, which would explain a lot. No power.
His OPS is Lincoln Riley.
Which is not
my new term for bad.
This is bad. How about this, Bill? We'll end here. So a flight from St. Louis to Seattle was delayed on the tarmac. So to help pass the time, there were band members on a flight that were going to play in Seattle that had an impromptu jazz concert. You had saxophonists, trombonists, trumpets, just playing jazz music on the flight for the people. Would you rather be forced to listen to a live jazz show stuck on a plane or sit next to someone who has their shoes off the entire flight?
The shoes, because I take my shoes off every plane flight.
Interesting.
What's wrong with taking your shoes off?
I think the overall, it varies obviously by person. I think the overall idea is keep your shoes on, so if you have smelly feet, no one else has to smell it.
No, you just, as long as you have socks on, it's fine.
People have smelly feet that go through the socks.
Disagree. My feet smell like
I'm
roses.
Not saying you. I'm just, I think the general principle or the idea would be you don't trust them.
In fairness, I tend to only do it if I get upgraded to the front of the plane because I have more space. Okay. So here's a big name drop. I'm just going to tell you. So I mentioned that there's a lot of famous people that live in my part of L.A. And I saw a pretty famous one at church the other day, and a buddy was asking, and a buddy reached out, a friend of mine who listened to the podcast version of the show, and asked me if it was Luka Doncic. And I said, why would I have seen Luka Doncic? Luka just moved into the neighborhood, and apparently not far from me. I actually know his house. It's right next, it's really close to a buddy of mine. And as I understand it, now I believe Jim Harbaugh also lives in my community. Would you rather randomly have Luka Doncic move in next to you or Jim Harbaugh move in next to you?
Wow. I would say Jim Harbaugh.
Really? That's such an LA question, right? Such an LA question.
But he's I think he's fascinating because he's like a weird guy. I say that in a good way. Too early. I just be kind of like to be his neighbor and kind of see some of the weird stuff he does. I think it'd be interesting. Also, he's a coach. He's probably never going to be around that much.
Who'd be more social? Who'd be more like, hey, we're having a barbecue. I'll have a beer. What's going on? How's your kids?
Jim. I don't know. I feel like Luka seems like he's shy.
A little standoffish? He's a little shy.
I think he'd be like,
hello, it is me, Luka. Have a great day at work. You know, when you're all getting in the car? All right. They both seem like nice guys. You know who's a great guy? Not just a nice guy? Brian McFadden. He's going to give us some football insight next year on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right. Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you. Brian McFadden is a longtime former NFL player, a two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is CBS Sports NFL analyst and CBS Sports HQ college football pregame analyst. In fact, he and the folks will be live from Tallahassee week one for Florida State Bama. You should follow him on X like I do, BMAC_sports talk. Mr. McFadden, good morning, dude. Hope you're having a good summer, man.
Good morning. How you doing?
Doing great. Let me just get the sort of difficult Florida State question out of the way here. Forgive my candor. I was talking about USC earlier and just how underwhelming Lincoln Riley's been. And my supposition, and you push back, BMAC, if you think this is wrong, my belief that programs that are glorious and have great histories can lose their grip on that. And I point to Nebraska because I remember when Nebraska was great. You look at, I don't know, Oklahoma to a degree. And I think maybe Florida State's on that list. Do you, first of all, like, do you agree? If you're a USC or any other program, do you have to be leery of a couple seasons going badly, creating the wrong kind of momentum?
Yeah, you have to be. And when you say badly, we're not talking about, you know, being a bottom dweller in your conference or things like that. We're talking about not living up to the standards that has been set from past great players and great coaches. Like, to your point with SC, you know, back in the day, they were always considered a perennial powerhouse. elite players, Heisman-like players. And because of that, you know, when you don't win double-digit games in a year, it's kind of looked at as a failure. With some programs, if you win 8 and 9, they'll take that and run with it. But when you look at some of these prominent football programs, if you're not winning double-digit games, they're clearly in that championship conversation, it's considered a letdown. And that's, I think, where SC currently lays in that equation. And then when you look at Florida State, they had more than a letdown type year a year ago. They only won 2 games. Right. I think that's the worst, you know, outing ever in the history of the football program. So oftentimes it happens. I mean, now let's use Alabama as an example. Everyone only remembers Alabama when Saban was there, right? But if you go back, especially when I came into high school, I didn't even take a trip to Alabama. Alabama didn't crack my top 10 because they were, you know, average at best. So it happens, and, you know, you just got to be able to weather the storm and find a way to get back to being in that prominent conversation when you're trying to chase that championship.
Yeah, and B-Mac, you're right. It's worth saying, when I'm talking about Oklahoma, Florida State, Miami, Nebraska, maybe USC, what I'm saying is, and I'll take a shot at my home state and my alma mater. If I'm those programs' fans, I'm more worried about being Iowa or Missouri, right? I'm not worried about being the worst team. I'm just worried about not living up to brutal standards. Let me dive into Alabama a little more and USC. Who do you have more optimism for this year to exceed expectations? Kalen DeBoer in a, you know, fill in big shoes spot part two, or Lincoln Riley in year, what, 4 here in Los Angeles?
Kalen DeBoer for me, and the reason why, I feel like he has the talent that's needed to be able to be relevant in the SEC. For Lincoln Riley, year 1 in the Big Ten, they weren't big enough. They weren't strong enough. How long will it take for him to get the type of horses that he needs to be able to race in that style of play in the Big Ten? So I think it still could be a growing pain situation for Lincoln Riley year 2 in the Big Ten, similar to what we saw in year 3. Let's go back to the Michigan game last year, SC in the Big House against Michigan. They couldn't stop the run. So everyone did the same thing against SC. They played bully ball in the trenches, and SC couldn't really uphold in that type of format. You know what I mean? So I think it still could be some issues with SC in terms of the Big Ten style of play.
All right, let me ask you this last college football question, probably the last one, Brian McFadden. I want to talk NFL too, but college football, there's so much going on. Finish this sentence for me. This year, Arch Manning will blank.
This year, Arch Manning will... I think he'll live up to the hype.
You do?
I think he'll live up to the hype. That's how I'll finish that statement. Arch Manning will live up to the hype. Now, when you look at the reason why I say that is because, number one, he has a talented coach in Steve Sarkisian in terms of offensive structure. He has talent around him. I do have my reservations with the offensive line. I think they're only returning one offensive lineman. I think that's CJ, if I'm not mistaken. So that could be an issue. But, you know, Arch has the attributes. He has the skill set, and he has talent surrounding him to be able to live up to the hype. And I think that's definitely a realistic feat for him.
Brian McFadden hanging out here on the show on X, BMAC underscore Sports Talk. Watch him at CBS Sports and CBS Sports HQ. BMAC, one of my colleagues here, I'm told this morning, predicted that the Jets are going to beat the Steelers in week 1. And the Steelers are interesting, right? Because I think you can look at that team and you can kind of see what you want to see. You can evaluate Aaron Rodgers the way that you want to. You can evaluate Mike Tomlin over the last many years very positively if you want to do that, or negatively if you want to focus on the lack of a playoff win. What do you think, as a Steeler great, as a 2-time Super Bowl champion, as a former Steeler, as I'm sure someone whose heart is still invested in what they do, what do you see in this football team this year and what's likely going to happen?
I see 9-10 wins. I think that's definitely doable. Heck, it's been doable every other year, regardless if we had Aaron Rodgers or not. I mean, you talk about, you know, winning those type of ball games with Mason Rudolph, you know, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, Duck Hodges, man. I mean, Mike Tomlin has shown the ability to do that. And I think this team is better, especially on the defensive side. I was up there a few weeks ago during training camp, and the morale is right where it needs to be. You know, when you talk about the sense of togetherness, which is very, very important to have overall team success. So I think this is a 9-10 win team. And, you know, for Pittsburgh, the season doesn't start until playoffs, because they can get into the playoffs. They just haven't been relevant in playoff play, and there lies the concerns with the team.
B-Mac, do you see a world where Micah Parsons actually doesn't play for the Cowboys this year or the start of this year? Is that realistic?
No question. I see a world where that actually happens. You know what? I just started watching the documentary with Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if you have seen it yet, but it's unbelievable. I'm going to keep it real with you. It's unbelievable. And one thing Jerry Jones stated, and I think it was episode one, he stated that he's always been the one to do things where people criticize him for his actions, where it might not be the most popular decision, it might not be the most liked decision, and he will be ridiculed and criticized, but that's his mantra, that's his mentality. And he said that's how he became the savvy, successful businessman that he is today. And he stated that with the first major investment in terms of searching for oil. And when he did, he bought the Dallas Cowboys and his movement in the Dallas Cowboys. Remember the first thing he did when he became the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, he fired Tom Landry, which was not a popular decision. He received death threats for firing Tom Landry. And he said, but that's how he's always been. He does things that he believes is right. He can care less what the outsiders are saying. So now when you look at the Micah Parsons situation and the current state of their relationship, I see and kind of, I don't understand, but I see where Jerry Jones is coming from, because he's done the unpopular thing throughout his business savvy career. So now when you look at Micah Parsons, to your point, yes, I can see a world where Micah Parsons might not play for the Cowboys this year. I can see a world where the Cowboys, they expect Micah to play under his final year of his contract. Is that the popular thing? No. Does it make football sense? No. But for Jerry Jones, he has always shown the ability or displayed the ability to do what he thinks is best, regardless of what everyone else is saying. And that's why they still have yet to come to a contractual agreement, because Jerry Jones wants to do things his way.
Brian McFadden here on the show. B-Mac, we've got in the NFC North a Lions team that lost both of its coordinators. We've got a Bears team that has question marks and upside, but in their quarterback and in a rookie head coach in Ben Johnson, both of whom are highly regarded by a lot of people, but unproven. And a Vikings team who have a new quarterback in J.J. McCarthy trying to run that offense. Which of those three teams, I'm excluding the Packers, which of those three teams do you think will be the most disappointing this year?
And it kind of pains me to say this, because I really, really respect the head coach, and I'm a big fan of the head coach. But I think Kevin O'Connell and the Minnesota Vikings. And what I mean when I say that, I'm not saying I think they're going to have a horrible year, but clearly they're not going to be as successful they were a year ago. And the reason why is because I have my reservations about the quarterback in J.J. McCarthy. Right? I mean, he's taken over. And when you look at the offensive structure, he has talent around him. But we've never seen J.J. McCarthy be a quarterback that's a volume-like quarterback. He's never been a volume-like quarterback. And listeners, what I mean when I say that, he's never been called to throw it around a yard consistently. He's never been called to do that. Let's go back to Michigan. What did Michigan do when J.J. was there? Run the football, play good defense. Run the football, play good defense. You know, he may have a game where he might throw it 20-plus times, but that wasn't consistently. That wasn't a consistent thing. So now I'm looking at where his style of play and just the volume or the lack thereof, I don't know if he could deliver the goods when need be in that type of scenario, especially in the NFL.
B-Mac, it's another year. It's another football season where people are trying to look for whatever new shiny thing can take down the Chiefs. And some of that focus, to a degree, has actually centered in the AFC West. Are you interested at all in buying stock in either the Chargers or the Broncos?
I mean, definitely the Chargers. I mean, I'm sorry, definitely the Broncos, yes. I buy stock in the Broncos for sure. Reason why, I respect and really value Sean Payton as a head coach. I really like what I saw from Bo Nix a year ago in his rookie campaign. The defense was considered, remember, one of the top defenses in the National Football League. They have improved. The offense has improved as well. So I really like the makeup of this Denver Broncos team. They have playmakers. And that's my concern with the Chargers. Offensively, the lack of playmakers. I know they just brought back Keenan Allen, but Keenan Allen is older. You know, Ladd McConkey was their best playmaker in the passing game. They didn't really do a lot to really improve in that element. You know, they brought in some new guys, but we have yet to see it flourish. So that's my concern. Not to mention, you know, you'll be without your top offensive lineman in Rashawn Slater because of the injury. So that's a concern. But I really like what I'm seeing from Denver.
B-Mac, when you look at what the Cleveland Browns are doing, right? They've obviously got Joe Flacco, who's going to start week one. They've got two rookie quarterbacks, and Shedeur Sanders is obviously a very high-profile quarterback. And both he and Dylan Gabriel, there's a ceiling there, right? There's the possibility if things go well, one or both those guys could be really good. Are they managing this in a really smart way because they've just invested in the most difficult-to-secure position of football, or are they undermining each of those guys by having them compete against each other?
Be determined. And Bill, the reason why I say to be determined is because I want to see how this quarterback room shakes out when they make their final cuts. Because right now, Joe Flacco is a starting quarterback, which I'm okay with. That's what I expected that. But outside of that, who will make this team? Because I, for one, feel like this is kind of indirectly a rebuild type scenario. So if Joe Flacco is the guy, I'm keeping Shedeur, I'm keeping Dylan, of course. He's a third rounder. And I'm cutting ties with Kenny Pickett. And the reason why I say that, guys, is because if there is a changeup somewhere during the season because of bad play or not just getting off to a good start, I need to see which one of these young guys can maybe be a bright spot for us so we can kind of try to build around in the future. And if you have a guy like Kenny Pickett standing in their way, that takes away an opportunity from either guy, Dylan or Shedeur. We know who Kenny Pickett is. We know what his ceiling is. You don't know what the ceiling is for either Shedeur or Dylan until they actually show you. So that's how I would look at it. That's why I say to be determined, because I got to see how everything works out once the final cuts are made to see exactly who they kept at the quarterback position. And that can tell me a lot.
All right, Brian McFadden, quick one to end here. What happens first? My Bears win a Super Bowl, or your Steelers are coached by someone not named Mike Tomlin?
Wow. That's a heck of a question. Your Bears win the Super Bowl.
Okay. Everybody wins. I love it.
Everybody wins. Yes. Your Bears win the Super Bowl. I think they got the first.
All right, I love it. Hey, B-Mac, keep doing your thing. You're crushing it. CBS Sports NFL analyst over there, CBS Sports HQ college football pregame analyst, and other analysis for CBS Sports HQ. As always, man, it's great having you on the show. It's very cool of you to make some time. Thank you very much, pal.
I thank you for the invite.
Thanks, buddy. B-Mac on the program, B-Mac _ sports talk. I didn't want to take up too much of his time, but Ryan Hickey, I think part of his thinking there, right, is he's thinking, all right, he is giving Mike Tomlin a lot of runway then. He's saying Mike Tomlin's going to be there another 10 years, and the Bears should, if Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams are the real deal, win perhaps over that stretch. I like that. Where would you go? I think I would go the other direction, if I'm being totally honest.
I would agree, because I'm not sure if the wheels fall off this season.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're talking 7 wins, 6 wins.
Yes.
I don't feel confident that Mike Tomlin is back next year.
I'm with you. Now, I will say this. You can look at the Steelers and you can make an argument that they're all in on Tomlin. And I don't know this, but because I'm with you. I think if things go badly, there should be a consideration of that, as good as Tomlin is. That's different than what will happen. See Dallas, right? What the Cowboys should do and what they do are different. There's an argument coming out of Pittsburgh, and it's compelling, that they basically are accepting success or failure with Aaron Rodgers this year, and they know that next year's a reset in terms of quarterback play, and that they're doing that in part because they are committed to Tomlin, and they're like, well, let's give it one more chance with this sort of all-in group, and if we have to reset, we'll reset. If Tomlin's there for the foreseeable future, and I don't know if he is. He is. I just looked it up. He's only 53. I mean, he could coach for 20 more years.
And the Bears' Super Bowl drought could continue for 30 more years, possibly.
Here's my, oh my God, you know, China doll, magic within magic within magic response. What if it doesn't work out for Ben Johnson? Mike Tomlin eventually goes away, coaches the Bears, wins Super Bowl. Perfect
Whoa.
Fit. Perfect fit.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah, that's never going to happen. That's like you picking Penn State every year to win the national championship, right? That's just wishful thinking.
Well, eventually, you know, a blind squirrel finds a nut, hopefully.
I'm trying. I'm feeling around for that nut in this tree. All right, let's do a little buy or sell, including taste, which is important, style, which matters, up against my very stubborn refusal to change. We'll explain in buy or sell next year. I'm Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Live in New York, but leave before it makes you too hard. Live in LA, but leave before it makes you too soft. I have lived in both, and that's a permanent state of personality for I'm too hard in a mean way, but I'm also just weak as hell when it comes to weather.
Bill Ryder, hard and soft at the same time.
Facts. Anyway, let's move on.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you. It is the day after National Radio Day, but we still love being here and we still appreciate you. And however you're listening, wherever you're listening, thank you. And by the way, this portion of the program is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
I'm excited about today's edition. You kind of got me. You got me pumped with one of your questions. So I'll get out of your way here and let you do it.
Okay, we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's start in college football, Bill.
Okay,
I'm gonna take you back a little bit. Florida State quarterback Thomas Castellanos continues to disturb the Hornets' nest. So if we go back to June, when talking about facing Alabama, he told On3, quote, "They don't have Nick Saban to save them. I just don't see them stopping me." Well, now he continued that. So after practice yesterday, he said this about Florida State's defense.
I think Coach White and our defense is the hardest defense I'll see all year. Just schematically and stuff like that, what they do. You know, it's hard to be back there and a lot of moving parts on their end. But, you know, it's helped me a lot and helped me be better and helped me progress as a quarterback and as a player and when to, you know, just take the check down or when to just eat it or throw it away and stuff like that and know when the play is over. So I think seeing them every day for the last 3 weeks has helped me a lot and progress as a quarterback.
So as a reminder, right, they play Alabama next Saturday. They also have Clemson on their schedule, top 10 team, and they also play Florida as well, top 15 team. Both on the road, both expected to have good defenses. Buy or sell? Thomas Castellanos needs to stop talking.
Au contraire, my friend, sell.
Sell.
I need him to talk more. I need him to have a podcast. I need a microphone in his face 24 hours a day. Bring me the wisdom. Bring me the candor. Candor? It's also a star. Bring me the candor. Bring me the insight. I love it. I can't wait till he gets his you-know-what kicked by one of these teams. He's like, actually, honestly, they suck. They got lucky. I love it. Give me the talkers.
We'll find out right away, too. It's the nice part about that Bama game. We'll know if he can put up or shut up
real quick.
Oh, boy. I'm shocked his teammates are not like, buddy, stop talking. Please, anybody. Mike Norvell is head coach. He's not talking to the media again. Let's stay in college football. This is a very college football story. So South Carolina offense coordinator Mike Shula has a unique way of teaching his quarterbacks how to improve. So when they're watching film back in the meeting room, if he spots a mistake made by a quarterback, he has that quarterback get up immediately, go to his office, and on his desk sits a fake piece of poop in which the quarterback is supposed to grab that, take it back into the meeting room, which emphasizes the mistake that they made. Buy or sell, Bill. You like this style of coaching?
I want to understand, just so I properly can address your very legitimate question. I'm a quarterback for Mike Shula, right? He's my offensive coordinator. I make a mistake. We're in film. He pauses the film. I stand up, walk into his office, and there's a plastic, fake-looking piece of poop.
Plush, but yes.
Okay, bring back into the room, and I have it now because I'm because I'm poop now, or I'm part of poop, or I'm connected to poop because I played like poop.
Sits on your desk, and you have to live with that as you watch yourself, rewatch yourself throw an interception at practice.
Some jokes, some humor gets lost in translation, so I could be wrong here. But I believe, and this is a statement that I know is big, that might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my entire life. I will sell.
Sell.
But I like this style of coaching. I mean, I don't even know, man.
You don't think Bill Ryder, the five-star quarterback, will learn not to throw an interception more, man, because he has a piece of poop, fake poop, man, on his desk?
I would have taken that. I wouldn't have taken that sack last week. But having grabbed the plastic poop in coach's office, I knew that I couldn't throw into that window. No, I don't think so. I worked through it. No.
Imagine like they throw a game-winning touchdown pass on the field after the game. Like, what was going through your mind as you made that pass? Well, I knew if I threw an interception, I was going to have to sit with the poop emoji all practice long. Couldn't do it.
What I'd like to know, and I don't know, is that this is something he's doing, and his guy's like, oh my God, this guy's the worst. Or there's some inside joke or something that I'm missing, and they all laugh and they find it funny. Trying real hard to give him the benefit of the doubt.
We have to try harder.
If this doesn't go well, we're going to have to rename him Mike Poopla.
Bye.
That's what he's opened himself up to.
Well, maybe Mike Shula is putting himself on the hot seat, but there are, as we enter this college football season, a lot of big-name coaches legitimately on the hot seat. We opened the show talking about Lincoln Riley as he tries to turn USC back into a national title contender. Right now, they have regressed every year he's been there. Brian Kelly entering year four on the Bayou looks to take LSU to the college football playoff for the first time under his leadership. Luke Fickell was hired to get Wisconsin to the playoff. They have gone backwards. He's looking to get them going again. So a lot of big-name coaches, right, have a lot of pressure in 2025. But they also have some big-time buyouts as well if they are to get fired. So I'm curious here, buy or sell. In this new era of NIL and revenue sharing, it becomes harder to fire a coach in college football. That is a big buyout.
I mean, it depends on some of the boosters out there. And what, but yeah, buy. It's
buy.
So here's a reality that isn't discussed a lot. And I'm friends with some of these guys. But I'll give you my statement. You buy or sell if you think this is true. One of the biggest problems in college football is the power and savviness of agents.
Bye.
I've interacted with these guys. I used to cover a lot of college football. It was a long time ago, but when I was a newspaper reporter in the Midwest. And a lot of these, not all, but a lot of these athletic directors are not nearly, they're playing checkers and the agents are playing chess. And it's amazing how guys who already want jobs negotiate contracts as if they have 400 offers. And I'm not trying to pick on Luke Fickell here, but good coach, fine. He was, what, the interim at Ohio State back in the day, if I remember this properly. He's a good... He's not Nick Saban. You didn't just steal Kalen DeBoer from Alabama, right? I mean, this is... He needs to succeed here as much as they need him to succeed. And so I think part of the issue is schools not negotiating effectively enough. Their desperation for coaches.
To highlight your point, this is just to get in the weeds here really fast with Luke Fickell specifically. He has something in his contract where it's like he automatically gets an extra year on his deal. I think it's like academics, or it's like something where basically it's like an easy box to check, and it's like, okay, boom, you finish the year, automatically another year. So they just went 5-7.
So I
know he got an extension for a year.
I know his agent really well. His agent is a great guy. He's a moral person. He cares about his client. Like, I really like him. He's a killer, man. Like, he's just a killer. Every time that I see one of his clients get a... Just, you know, like, oh, this guy is hired. I just think that school is so screwed if that guy doesn't succeed. To your exact point. We went 5-7. Extension raise. Thank you. Ba-boom. Ba-ching. This guy, this agent used to call me. And we'd be talking about sourcing stuff, whatever we talk. And he would start giving me this advice, like, well, Bill, like, what you got to do is you just got to get, I tell my clients, you get $10 million and you put it in an interest-bearing bond. Or whatever. And he would give me this, and I'd have to be like, dude, I'm never in my lifetime going to have a fraction of $10 million. No, trust me. You get the $10 million. But he's a really nice, he's a nice guy. But you're not, you know, I don't have you doing my contracts for me, right? Bill, you're leaving CBS Sports, but here's a $400 million payout. It's not the way that it works for me, alas. Good for buy or sell Luke Fickell is going to succeed in Wisconsin? Because for me, it's already a sell.
Sell.
You're not very good. I was talking about programs that can fall behind, right? And I was talking about them in the context earlier of legitimate powerhouses that fall to mediocrity. The fall of so-soism. Nebraska, Miami, USC, I think is on that list, Florida State. It can go the other way, too. You can be a program that was basically Iowa or Missouri or whatever, whoever you want to point to, and then you can wake up and you're Northwestern, you know? Illinois takes your slot, and so, and you're now you're Wisconsin. Suddenly, you're on the wrong side of that. It's just the more that there's money in college football, the more that some athletic departments are going to invest in that, the more that the competition for the few spaces of excellence or even mediocrity go away. And one last thought. I know I'm being long-winded here. My daughter, Madeline, is a junior in high school. God help me. And we're already talking about colleges, and we were talking to a college advisor, a person who advises on, like, what – and I didn't realize the way in which Colorado now is harder to get into because of Deion Sanders. And so it's just an instructive that, yeah, athletic departments want to win and universities want to invest because they want to win, right? School pride. And boosters help pay for that, sure. And it can pay for itself. If you have a very, very productive college football program, you can make money. What I have slept on, because it wasn't my life experience, but it's worth reminding people, is if you're UNC and you're investing in Bill Belichick and all that money, yeah, you want the football program to work and make money. But if UNC becomes successful, now UNC is already hard to get into, you're going to have two or three times the number of kids who want to apply. You can raise your tuition. And so there's all this competition for only a select number of elite and even good spots in the college football pantheon. And if you slip up and you hire Luke Fickell and it's the wrong deal, you may not recover in 5 or 6 years. There are a lot of forces out there that are pushing for football excellence for a lot of interesting reasons.
To pivot to baseball, Bill, Shohei Ohtani had a rough outing on the mound yesterday in Colorado. He allowed 5 runs and 9 hits in just 4 innings as LA did fall to the lowly Rockies. Ohtani this season has made 10 starts. Now he's not gone beyond the 5th inning, so they've been short. But he's a 4.61 ERA so far through those 10 starts, the highest of his career. Buy or sell, the Dodgers should think twice about pitching Ohtani in the postseason.
I'm going to buy, but with a sort of a
buy.
Some context added. Let's just see where he is. We're in August, right? We've got ample weeks left to sort of see where he's at. Let me posit a theory to you that we should ask the next baseball guest we have on. I've been thinking about this, and I don't know the answer, so I'm curious what your guess is. Buy or sell Ohtani is struggling at pitching because his unique skill set and excellence as a hitter means he couldn't, because he couldn't go and do a rehab assignment in the minors, it impacted his return as a pitcher and his confidence.
Buy.
I mean, there's a reason that great pitchers who do not want to go to Tuscaloosa or Des Moines or Bakersfield nonetheless will go and do a start or two or three when they're coming back from a serious injury as a pitcher. It's not just the mechanics and getting your arm back in shape. A lot of it's just the self-confidence. Striking a guy out is striking a guy out. And in the beginning, it doesn't matter if he's an all-star, he can't hit a curveball, and that's why he's stuck at Double-A. And so I'd love to get like an expert on this. It's an interesting reality for Ohtani. You cannot send him on a rehab assignment. He's an MVP as an offensive player, and yet it may somewhat complicate his ability to return as quickly as you want at the other part of what he's great at.
And to also know spring training for him. Like he first got on the mound pitch from the mound, I think it was like in May.
Yeah.
So that's all that time, except where you're working on stuff, getting confidence. Now you're working on stuff against major league hitters in games that matter. It's tough.
It would almost... I don't run a baseball team, even though I should. Mr. Friedman, hire me. It would almost make sense if you're the Dodgers to bring up... Like, they'll have guys that are in rookie ball or that are really behind that'll stay behind in surprise. No, they're not in surprise. Where are they? Wherever the hell the Dodgers do their spring training. And just bring, like... 10 of those guys and do simulated games with Ohtani or something. You're going to have to think creatively when he's rehabbing because you have to. It's better to simulate a minor league rehab experience at Dodger Stadium on an off day than it is, I think, to have him pitch an inning against major league hitting in the 5th inning to get him going, which obviously has not been effective.
So I want to skip to this last question here since we're running out of time. Big controversy on the internet, Bill. Cracker Barrel. They're facing a lot
I love
of
Cracker
heat.
Barrel.
For their redesigned logo that was launched.
People are mad.
Very mad.
Big mad.
Big mad.
Okay. Okay.
So you've been, you know what the logo looks like. For those who don't, it's a classic logo, old man sitting down, kind of leaning on a barrel. That was Cracker Barrel for decades.
Buy or sell real quick, sorry, what is a Cracker Barrel? Are there crackers in the barrel?
No.
Buy or sell, you know.
Well, I've never been, but I'm pretty sure it's just a breakfast place.
No. I understand what the restaurant is. What does it mean? What's a Cracker Barrel? Not what is the restaurant. What is it named after?
I don't.
Are there crackers in barrels?
Does it have to? I don't know.
You don't think it's named after? You know, like the pancake, you know, Uncle Bill's Pancake House, which is up, you know, near me. They didn't invent the name pancake, but they call it Pancake House because they sell pancakes. What's a Cracker Barrel?
Do we know the genesis?
What I'm asking. All right, maybe
I'm
just
a different restaurant.
Anyway, I'm sorry. What is your question?
Like Chipotle,
he's leaning on a barrel in the old one. So is that are there crackers in that barrel?
Maybe.
Bunch of saltines?
I think CeeLo might have the answer. CeeLo, do you?
Well, I'm just reading. I did a quick Google. Why do they call it a Cracker Barrel? It says crackers used to be delivered to the old country stores in barrels, and people would congregate around them to discuss the news of the day. So since the restaurant was meant to help people reconnect with friends and family over a good meal, it was a fitting name. I don't know if that works for you, Bill, but that's what Google says.
There's crackers in the barrel. All right, back in the day.
Cracker Barrels used to be the old water cooler, huh?
Okay.
People gather around, coffee
then
shop.
Then you need a water cooler because you're eating all the crackers and your mouth is dry. That's where that came from. One led to the other.
So gone is that iconic logo, and now what it essentially is just a giant yellow rectangle with a simple Cracker Barrel phrase.
Got
so
it.
Buy or sell, Bill. Most logo, and especially in sports, uniform redesigns are way worse now than they used to be.
Wait, so that's the, you don't like the new ones, what you're saying?
The new ones suck. Buy or sell the new, a lot of these logo
redesigns
suck.
I have no strong opinion on this. I'll defer to you.
Buy.
Honestly, I like the new Cracker Barrel logo until CeeLo told us the history, and now we're betraying the sort of, you know, lineage of how crackers got delivered.
But it's also unique to them. It's an old man sitting down, leaning out. Why does it have to change? So now it's just a clip art Cracker Barrel. There's nothing distinct about it.
I haven't been to a Cracker Barrel in 10 years, but when I lived in Arkansas, I went to Cracker Barrel all the time, and it is amazing.
The Utah Jazz used to have great uniforms with the Rocky Mountains on them, and then they just go to this neon highlighter yellow,
cool,
which is a Jazz in the most simple font. What are we doing? Who wants that?
You just jumped to the Jazz. Is this about, you're big mad about the Jazz? I didn't know that.
I just feel like a lot of teams that undergo, you know, uniform changes or logo designs compared, like, we always now are wanting retro stuff. Why? Because I would argue a lot of the things made in the 70s and 80s, logo-wise, are way better than now.
All right.
And Cracker Barrel was just my platform to jump off on. I apologize.
I like that you got into it. CeeLo gave us some answers on what Cracker Barrel means. It all came together. You know what else is coming together? Utter dysfunction in Dallas. Another day and more proof that Jerry Jones is washed. We'll get into that after a sports flash from Crystal Presti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Bill, final week of the NFL preseason begins tonight. Couple of games on the schedule. Steelers at Panthers, Patriots at Giants. So one more chance there for rookie QB Jackson Dart to show the Giants coaching staff what he can do in live game action. Meantime, Bills head coach Sean McDermott says Josh Allen will not play in Saturday night's preseason finale against the Bucs, marking the first time in Allen's NFL career that he will not take a single preseason snap. As for the Bucs, head coach Todd Bowles said this morning they will carry both wideout Chris Godwin and left tackle Tristan Wirfs on their initial 53-man roster, even though both players are rehabbing and not expected to play in games until at least October. Texans safety Jimmy Ward, arrested back in June on a felony domestic violence charge, is now being sued by the woman he allegedly assaulted. She is seeking damages of more than $20 million, and her attorney, Tony Busby, of course, represented multiple women in their cases against former Texans turned Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson. From golf, round one of the Tour Championship from Eastlake is just underway. Scotty Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, 1-2 in the FedEx Cup standings are the final pairing for the 30-player event scheduled to tee off at 2 p.m. Eastern. And Humpy Wheeler, a pioneering motorsports promoter and former president and GM of Charlotte Motor Speedway, passed away Wednesday at the age of 86. I'm Chris Lopresti.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you here on Ryder Than You. This portion of the show is sponsored by the Hyundai Getaway Sales Event going on now. Get deals so right, it almost feels wrong. Don't miss out. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. Ryan Hickey, the executive producer, doing a great job, as he always does. CeeLo, Crystal Presti on updates today, crushing it. Brian McFadden was on the show, was awesome. Thanks to those three gents for hanging out, being part of the program. I think Jerry Jones might be washed, by the way. B-Mac had a different perspective, different nugget of information. I have not watched the Cowboys documentary. I've not watched the documentary, in part because it makes me sad to watch. I think Jerry is washed. Brian McFadden's view is that Jerry Jones has always operated as a Maverick, and he is being a Maverick now. Now, I've known Mavericks who have lost their way, and they can't tell what made them uniquely qualified to be great before they lost their way to being uniquely qualified to be embarrassing after. It's a fine line. If you have a compass of one, and Jerry certainly had that 30, 40 years ago, and you lose that compass, well, then everybody's lost if they rely on you. And in this Micah Parsons fiasco, in this hold-in standoff, another prominent voice, and this is on the Scoop City podcast, Diana Russini painted a picture again. We heard from Adam Schefter earlier in the week. This is Russini painting a picture that does not give you a real sense of confidence in what Jerry Jones is doing in Dallas.
We say it's status quo, but I think it's important to just highlight what's happening here. Even if Micah wanted to open up this negotiation to remain a Dallas Cowboy, the Cowboys are not allowing that because they won't talk to his agent. Like, you can't negotiate a deal if you don't talk. What next, right? Like, What happens here? Somebody's going to have to give. The agent can't do anything because the owner doesn't want to talk to him. So It's going to be on Jerry, if he wants to do the deal, to pick up the phone and say, all right, put that to bed. Let's renegotiate. But I don't know if that is going to happen. I feel like in the past with other deals, I always had belief that Jerry would just put aside the ego and open up the wallet and get the player that he needs on the field. This is going to be a lot of backtracking by him. I don't know if he's going to be willing to do that.
I mean, it seems so, it should seem so improbable that the season will actually begin in a short amount of time, by the way, and that Micah Parsons will not be playing for the Dallas Cowboys, whether it's because they're still at an impasse or because he's been traded or whatever, and yet, not impossible. Every person who's in the know now is suggesting this could be disaster. I will say this as a thought to just keep in mind. There are tens and hundreds of millions of dollars on the line. If you are Jerry Jones, that money is on the line. If you are obviously Micah Parsons, that money is on the line. If you are Parsons' agent, because you get a big percentage of that money is on the line. If you work for Jerry Jones in media relations, public relations, as a spin person, you make a lot of money. You need to make your boss millions and not cost millions. You have your career on the line. And so people will lie, and there will be spin. And there will be things that are floated to try to leverage one side or the other. I mean, this could certainly be coming from Jerry Jones' side to impress upon Parsons that they're willing to see this through and not have him play when that's not true. Or it could be Parsons' side. It's hard sometimes because there's so much money at stake in getting at what's real, even with the people who are best in the world at telling you, people like Schefter and like Russini. That said, Jerry Jones, I think, has shown himself over the years to, I think, have lost his fastball. And lost his fastball is generous. This guy should be pulling a Ricky Henderson when Henderson was 48 and being in the Mexican League by this analogy. I mean, he's not at the level anymore. I don't think. And I always thought there would be a time and a place where his son Stephen Jones would transition to taking over while dad would sort of be GM, owner, decision maker emeritus, right? He's there and he's advising, but that's not it. This is Jerry's world. Not just where they play, but how they function. And I have zero confidence in him making the right decision, whatever the right decision happens to be. I don't. And so I think it's reasonable if you're a fan of another team to start licking your chops and start picturing Micah Parsons in your jersey. I will tell you the truth, and this is a reflection of my willingness to delude myself. Ryan Hickey, I keep thinking about Micah Parsons in a Bears jersey. I keep saying it.
It worked with Khalil Mack a few years ago.
It
made
did.
A trade from the Raiders. Maybe you can will this one into existence here and have they that were, same trade 2.0.
But why not? Why not another team? Maybe Jerry is crazy like a fox. Maybe he's got it all figured out. The thing is, Micah Parsons is worth the money. This is the problem. He's worth the money. He's not 35 years old. It's not as if you're in a championship window that only lasts a year, and he maybe has a year that's great left, but he's trying to get a deal for three, and it's a really tough call. Those things happen. This is not that. This is not Atlanta giving Kirk Cousins a whole bunch of money and Minnesota having to make the right call, but you didn't know at the time to let him go, right? This is not any of that. This is a guy who's in his prime and can play at the highest level in football. And outside of quarterbacks, maybe the best player in the National Football League. He may be the best player anyway. Outside of quarterbacks, maybe the most important player in the National Football League. He's certainly in the conversation. And so another day and another proof that Jerry just being Jerry. As always, thank you for listening to the show and the program. We love doing it. We're very appreciative of you letting us hang out with you. I'm very excited about tomorrow because it's Friday, and I love doing Bum of the Week. I love seeing if I get nominated, if Ryan gets nominated, you know, whether Aaron Rodgers can be in there. I just feel like we're the three constants. So tune in for that. We have a great guest lined up for you. We're going to dive into Bill Belichick. As always, thank you for hanging out here. I am Bill Ryder. The show is Ryder Than You. We'll see you back here tomorrow on the Infinity Sports Network.